This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. Welcome to Enterprise. My name is Rich Bradbury and this is Open for Business. Today in the studio with me, I have Adzim Halim. He's the country head of Ninjavan. We'll be talking about that. So they are a logistics company. They focus on technology that strives to achieve excellent operating standards, which have fueled its growth. And as a result, to win the trust of all likes of e-commerce players across the region, some of their regional partners are Lazada, Shopee, Zalora, and their local include Fashion Valley, Maxis, Nilofa, and Signature Snack, to name just a few. Recently, they've officially partnered with Pressorana Malaysia Berhad for the largest network of parcel pickup and drop-off lockers in the Klang Valley, with conveniently accessible Ninja boxes at all 86 LRT stations. This initiative was developed as a way to relieve the stress of consumers and enable them to drop off and pick up their packages at their own convenience on their commute to work and back home. The goal is also to give added value services and enrich the experience of the millions of commuters on the Rapid KL network. Welcome to the show, Adzim.
Hi, Richard. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. Right. So tell me about the beginnings of Ninjavan, as far as you know.
Right. So I joined Ninjavan in May 2015. So I was actually the first hire in Malaysia. So Ninjavan had been operational in Singapore for about 8 months before that. So I met the founders and they were like, and it was really cowboy, as we like to say at the start, right? So they basically said, do you want to come?
Right.
Like, do you want to come launch Malaysia with us? So I was like, sure. So I left my engineering consulting job in Singapore and I joined them for the first meeting. And we met, that was actually when we first met Grab. More than 4 years ago. And little did I know that that night itself, we would have to go. I mean, we're a logistics company, we're a courier company. So that night itself, I had to go drive a van to pick up parcels from Lazada. And at that time, we were staying, we didn't even have an office. So we were staying in Bangsa South.
Right.
At one of the apartments in Bangsa South. So we just rented an apartment. And so picked up the parcels and then brought them to the car park, and the car park was actually our warehouse at that time.
They literally threw you in the deep end.
Yeah. So we had to bribe the security guards with donuts, so they let us like sort the parcels. Because I mean, so we picked up those parcels, sorted them at night. Then during the day, there were three of us. It was me and the two founders.
Right.
And we literally sent the parcels ourselves, and that was the first day of Ninjavan Malaysia.
Wow. Yes. How long ago was that?
About 4.5 years.
4.5 years ago.
Yeah.
And how have things changed in the last 4.5 years?
Oh, right. So we started maybe with 25 parcels in Bangsa. So now we have full coverage of Malaysia. We do close to, I mean, depending on the day of the year, we do 70 to 100,000 deliveries a day now.
70 to 100,000. Wow. Yeah. That's quite a lot.
Yeah. So we've got about 87 stations, employ about 2,500 people.
And that's within the last four...
Within the last 4 years.
Wow. Yeah. Good expansion.
Yeah, it's incredibly aggressive, I would say.
So there's a lot of logistics companies here in Malaysia.
And on
different scales, let's say. You know, some are very good, some are not so good. Mm-hmm. What do you think sets you apart from some of the other ones? What would you say is your USP?
So I think that our USP has changed over the years. So when we first started, it was very, very deep. Very strong capabilities to do very deep integrations with complicated platforms, right? Real-time tracking and all this stuff. But I think now we've come to realize that what's most important to the customer is reliability and convenience and peace of mind, right? So it's always, I think our best USP now, I would say, is our high operating standards, right?
And how many staff did you say you had?
So we run about 2,500 in Malaysia now?
Just in Malaysia?
Just in Malaysia, yeah.
Now, I was reading you're now operating in what, seven countries?
Six and a half,
Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
We're talking about reliability being the one big thing that a lot of customers, you know, look toward, especially for a logistics company.
Right.
How difficult is that to kind of manage, do you think, across 6.5 different countries?
I think it's very difficult. So I think. Well, number one, it's. I mean, when people think of Southeast Asia, they think of one block.
Exactly, they think of like this blue.
This is like this gel.
Yeah.
This massive like gel of people. Yeah. When in fact, it's six different countries with six different cultures,
yeah.
six different languages,
yeah.
with six different, yeah, I mean, six different people, right? So it's a different battle in each country. So in Malaysia, I think we have done quite a good job with regards to, we did, you know, mess up a few times at the start, right? None of us, actually, what's funny is no one in the founding team of Ninja Van have actually had any
background in logistics, yeah. Right? I knew you were going to say that.
Well, we're just a bunch of guys that wanted to do something. Yeah, so, yeah, but I think we've done an okay job in Malaysia.
Okay.
Well, at least in Malaysia's case.
What would you say then for you have been some of the biggest challenges here in Malaysia so up to now?
Right. So for me, it was more like learning to manage at different scales. So when we started, it was just three of us. And yeah. then we went to a team of 20. And then next thing you know, 4 years later, 2,500 people, right? And if you don't have, and learning how to manage a team of that size, if it's, while you're also growing the team to that size, was always a very, very big challenge, right? Because when you scale from, let's say, 10 to 100, and then 100 to 2,005, if you don't have the processes and the structures in place to manage such a big group of people, then there's a tendency for it to collapse.
Things are going to go wrong.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Of course.
So how did you kind of manage that? I mean, you're jumping from very few people, very aggressively jumping up to 2,500 people. Did you look outside for solutions as to how you could manage that amount of people? Did you like speak to mentors or anything like that? Or did you just have other people come in and say, this is how you should be doing it?
Right. No. So so I speak to the regional team. So I speak to the founders a lot. I also read a lot. Mm. Right. So I read... I just read a lot of books about how to manage big teams, how to manage for performance, stuff like that. And finally, I invested a lot in the people in the management team.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, I think at the start, maybe my misconception was that I could do everything myself, right? And I think being a young, wannabe hotshot startup guy, that was maybe one of the issues that bottlenecked the company. Mm. So what I did was, and then instead, I came to realize this quite early on, and I was like, you know what? I should be creating the best versions of the people in my team.
Right.
Such that this can, so that is scalable.
Yeah.
Right. So that's basically what I spent my time on.
How have things gone wrong? Give me an example of when something has gone horribly wrong. And, you know, you've tried whatever you can to fix this problem, but you're just like, you know, I'm going to need to speak to somebody about this. How do we fix this issue? There must have been times when something has just gone.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's operational failures are, I would say, unavoidable in logistics. Mm. Right. And I think no matter how good any logistics company is, there will always be that 0.1% or 0.5% where things, you know, parcels go missing or parcels get, deliveries are late or drivers are rude. They throw parcels and stuff like that. So that happened, you know, that did happen a few times. I would like to think they're isolated incidents. But so normally when that happens, I go straight up to the regional team, who, I mean, they have a better view and they see what's happening in six countries. So normally if you have an issue happening to you, it's not the first time they've heard about it because it's happened elsewhere. It's happened elsewhere. So I normally go straight to them. So yeah, for operational issues like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy it?
I do.
Yeah?
I do. It's very fulfilling.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you think are your daily challenges?
My daily challenges? Oh, yeah. So changing role, right? So as I shared before, like, learning to manage from a small team to a very, very large team means that my role has also changed from the start, right? So back then, when I had 25 parcels, if I wanted to keep every single customer happy, I could deliver the 25 parcels myself.
By hand.
By hand.
With a smile on your face.
Country head delivery, VVIP, white glove for you, sir. Right? But now that, like, I have to learn how to become impactful in different ways.
Right.
Right? So I'm always looking for things that move the needle, like how I best spend my time to move the needle for the company.
Okay, I mean, when you're starting off in a company like this and you're saying that there's four of you or however many there were at the very beginning, you're very, very hands-on, you know, and everything is hands-on. And now, of course, with 2,500 employees, there's the, you have to be a lot more hands-off.
Of course.
Right? Has that been difficult for you, that transition of kind of like leaving other people in charge of areas that normally you want to be involved in, but now you just kind of...
Yes. So I did have the issue, right? Because
it's partly your baby, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, if I feel that I'm the best person to do the job, right? I will try to do it myself.
Right.
But then I also become the bottleneck, as I mentioned earlier.
Right, yeah.
So then everything just slows down. And then, you know, if you don't delegate, the company doesn't move.
Mm.
So that's, yeah, I actually struggled with that a bit earlier on, right? Because I wanted to do everything.
Of course.
I wanted to speak to the customer. Yeah. I wanted to apologize. I wanted to do this on time. I want to go for the sales meetings. I want to go for the ops meetings. Yeah, but I've got a very, very strong team.
Right.
We have a very, very strong team. I'm quite proud of them. So they've done a very good job so far.
Okay.
Now I just take it easy.
On that note, we'll take a very short break.
Sure.
You are listening, of course, to Adzim Halim. He is the country head of Ninja Van Malaysia. We're going to take a very short break. Of course, you are tuned into Enterprise here on BFM 89.9. This is Open for Business. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Because friends matter. BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Enterprise and Open for Business. My name is Rich Bradbury. Today in the studio with me, I have Adzim Halim. He is the country head of Ninja Van Malaysia. Adzim, how would you describe Ninja Van?
So Ninja Van, we are the best tech-enabled express logistics company in Southeast Asia right now.
When you say tech-enabled, there's a bunch of people at home going, scratching their heads going, what does that mean?
Right. So we use a lot of technology. So number one, to offer great services to the end recipient, but also use a lot of tech to improve our operations to maintain high operating standards.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the company originally was created in Singapore.
Yeah.
And now operating, and I said seven, you said 6.5 countries.
Yeah.
How has that expansion been? Because it's been very quick.
Yeah.
Just tell me a little bit about the expansion process.
So, so the entire expansion took about 3.5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it was always on the back of very strong partnerships with existing e-commerce players. So when we expanded into Malaysia, we actually, so the company was founded in Singapore and we had developed a very strong working relationship with Lazada there.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, hey, you know what? In Malaysia, we need you guys. If you can offer the same level of service with the same tech solutions, we'll be happy to provide you the first few deliveries.
Mm.
So then we were like, yeah, sure, let's do it. Mm. Then that's how we got started in Malaysia. And that's normally, and actually we've been following that play for all the other countries as well.
I mean, we touched on briefly in part one about how they're not just six different areas, they're six different countries, they're six different cultures.
Yeah.
What kind of barriers have you come up against, you know, if any, in some of these other countries? Myanmar, for example, you know, I'd imagine could be quite a different country to operate in.
Yes. Number one, so competition in each of the countries, the incumbents, they do vary with regards to, I would say, the level of competition that they provide, right? Then after that, I would say the culture actually plays quite a big part.
Right.
Right. So culture, when I say culture, I mean, so in Indonesia, for example, you'll find that motorcycles are very, very significant and important part of Indonesians' life.
Yeah.
Right. So given, combined with, I would say, the traffic in Jakarta, it means that you have to design your operations to match your fleet to support more bikes to support your ops, right? So this means vans, trucks, they kind of fall to the wayside.
Right.
Right. You also find this, this is quite similar in Vietnam.
Yeah.
So in Vietnam, you'll be quite surprised. They move entire washing machines, fridges on bike.
Yeah.
Right. And that's quite normal.
I have seen that and it blew my mind. Yeah.
Exactly. You'll never find that here though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Because in Malaysia, vans and trucks are more commonplace. Mm. So, I mean, these cultural differences, it's something that we had to figure out quickly when we entered the market.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, in terms of marketing yourselves as a company, like you said, when you enter the markets originally, it was through partnerships, and I'm sure these partnerships helped with marketing strategy as well. But as a company yourself, how have you looked at marketing? What kind of strategies have you employed?
So in Malaysia's case, actually in the first 3 years, we did almost zero.
Almost zero, yeah.
Yeah, so the reason for that is we grew at the rate that we wanted to with very little marketing spend. Mm. So, I mean, because we're business facing, ultimately we support businesses.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're generally B2B. B2C in terms of the delivery, but B2B in terms of the business transaction.
Yeah.
So, and the B2B market, it's a lot smaller than consumer market. So if you know one, you will meet all the other businesses and word of mouth travels quite quickly. So so that's actually, we've managed to get by with almost no marketing. Mm. But this year, however, as we're looking to support more of the smaller businesses and the SMEs, we are actually investing quite heavily with regards to marketing.
Can you tell me, speaking about investing, can you tell me a little bit about where initial money came from for NinjaVan?
Sure.
Was it self-funded or?
No. So actually, our seed round came from a few angel investors, mostly Singaporeans. And then our Series A had a few PE firms. We had Monk's Hill. And then Series B, we had Abraj. Then Series C, Abraj B Capital, which is Eduardo Saverin's fund. Mm. Yahoo Japan. And then Series C, we had DPD Group. Mm. Who are the second largest logistics company in Europe.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know. So
we're on Series D now. And that's when so Grab and all start coming in.
They start sniffing around. And
yeah. So,
okay.
So we're in the midst of closing our Series D now.
Which is why we can't talk about numbers, isn't it?
It's a bit difficult.
Right. Yeah. What can we talk about in terms of numbers?
I mean, I've already shared that we do about 70 to 100,000 a day.
Yeah.
We're forecasting 2x growth a year from now.
A year from now?
A year from now.
In Malaysia or regionally?
In Malaysia. So, okay. So Malaysia, we're not even, Malaysia is not the largest market in Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
So we're like, but I would say yes. I mean, it's sort of normalized within the company. So yeah, we're like second smallest.
Yeah.
Singapore is, the smallest.
Is the smallest.
Yeah.
By next year, you want to be 2x,
mm-hmm.
Which by the sounds of things, the markets that you're in, the funding that's potentially coming in seems fairly, it's not even optimistic, it's pretty much on the table, right?
Hopefully.
I would imagine. 5 years' time?
Hard to say. So 5 years' time, I think what we'd like to see ourselves doing is building the different connections between all the NinjaVan countries, right? So I think e-commerce and express logistics at this point in time is still very localized to each country, right? So the next step for us is to really explore how the movements between countries, right? So my sell to all the local businesses in Malaysia is there's NinjaVan cover the whole of Southeast Asia. If you're selling something in Malaysia through our network, you can sell something to anyone across Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
Because I mean, e-commerce is, there are three pillars of e-commerce, right? The first one is payments. Second one is platform. So payments is how people pay, credit card, cash on delivery. The second one is platform is basically how you buy. Mm. It could be on a marketplace like Lazada or Shopee. It could be your own website. It could be through WeChat. It could be through WhatsApp. And the last one is logistics, right? So both payment and platform, they're both digital.
Yeah.
The difficulty comes in logistics.
Yeah.
So NinjaVan is a solution which offers you, full Southeast Asia coverage, ship from anywhere to anywhere in Southeast Asia. So, and you already have, since the first two pillars are also digital, you can technically sell anything to anyone in Southeast Asia and we'll ship it for you. So that's, in 5 years' time, I think we'll really start to see the fruits of the network.
Well, that's interesting that you should talk about that. I mean, when we're talking about selling online, for example, how have you seen that change in the last 4 years?
That's a very interesting question. So I think the experience of buying and selling online, it's very experiential right now. So it's not so, you'll find that nowadays, even on the platforms, it's a lot more than just buying and selling, right? There's always the I want to chase the sale.
Correct.
Right? There's a video. It also becomes like an infographic or something. There's something that there are incentives and it's almost like a game to a certain extent.
Yeah, I agree.
You also find a higher degree of curation with regards to products and services, especially when it comes to non-platform or marketplace selling. So in Malaysia, I think social commerce is growing, 30% year on year? right? So, and that is really curated, right? People selling through Instagram, people selling through a Facebook group. It might not be a big brand. It just could be like, even in the more rural areas, you find that there are village leaders or village aunties that have a group and they sell like pots and pans, right? And all this stuff, right? So it's definitely changing. It's not your traditional look for something online, you need to buy it. Right. So social commerce is picking up. Malaysia also has a very high percentage of telecommerce.
Yeah.
So TV buying, what's it called? Tele shopping.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's on the rise too.
That's huge. Yeah. And then live streaming is about to pick up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So live streaming is huge in China now.
Right.
So I see that maybe in, I mean, if you like watching TV to buy things, you will also like watching a live stream to buy things, right? So I think that's maybe where commerce is headed in Malaysia.
Very interesting. I mean, I've been keeping track of, you know, people buying via social commerce for a couple of years now. And when it became easy to do it via Instagram, you know, part of me is thinking, well, one, it's extremely convenient. Mm-hmm. And two, it's dangerous for us consumers because you're just like swiping before you even realize it. You bought something. Your data's already there.
Yeah.
You know.
Credit card numbers are already there. Numbers security there. Goods are already there.
Exactly. And that's my final question. You know, of course, when we live in a day and age now where people are worried about their data and their security and everything.
Right.
How are you protecting your customers?
So, so number one, we are bound to PDPA laws. And the data that we have, we're also bound with data protection agreements with our partners as well. So technically, we're not allowed to do anything with the data that that we collect.
I think people will be reassured by that.
Yeah.
All right. Azim, thank you very much for that today.
Thanks so much, Richard.
That
was a lot of fun.
That has been Azim Halim. He's the country head of Ninja Van Malaysia. If you missed any part of this show, don't forget the podcast is available very shortly up online wherever you get your podcasts from. And of course, it's on Spotify too. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.